welcome to the Growth Tribe podcast, where we're all about growing ourselves to create lives we effing love on our terms. I'm Ellen, and I'm a former biomedical researcher turned coach who fell in love with personal growth when it empowered me to transform my health, quit my PhD, travel the world, and start my own business. But do not get me wrong, I'm still figuring my shit out too, and I'm so pumped to share what I'm learning along the way. We've got amazing interviews, big stories, tips, tricks, and no bullshit action steps that we can all learn from. So with that, welcome to this episode of The Growth Tribe. Hey friend, and welcome back to The Growth Tribe podcast. I am so excited today because we are diving into the concept of mindfulness. But we're going to be doing things a little bit differently today because I'm actually not interviewing anybody. Instead, I am being interviewed by a really good friend of mine, Elena Thurston. She actually recently gave her first TED Talk in Colorado Springs, and you guys will be hearing from her and her story in a couple weeks. But she actually reached out to me and asked if she could interview me for her community to talk about the concept of mindfulness and why it's so important, not just from the woo-woo perspective, but how practical it is. So we are going to be deep diving into some practical mindfulness tips and practices. But before we do that, I really want to set some context. So when Elena reached out to me, she defined mindfulness in this manner. It's the ability to intentionally observe our thoughts and actions without judgment. And why she reached out to me is because she said that she had felt like there were a lot of women who were struggling with the woo of meditation and journaling. What she said in her initial email was, "I feel like many women lose their ability to be both strategic and non-judgmental of themselves without even realizing it, myself included. I feel like it would be useful to explore how to be aware and mindful of that, as well as explore strategies for finding joy, love, contentment in the present, as well as being completely committed to an awesome future. The two can coexist. The challenge is creating that ability." So we wanted to deep dive into this together. So it's going to be a little bit different than usual. You guys are going to hear a little bit more of my story and some of the tips that I recommend from the perspective of mindfulness. So with that, let's get into it. Today's interview of me, which is weird to introduce, done by one of my favorite people, Elena Thurston. So let's get into it.
Ellen, I'm so glad you're here.
Me too. I love doing stuff like this.
It's so fun. I have had such a blast doing these interviews, and I was so excited that you were available because I am so excited to get your perspective on mindfulness and meditation and journaling and all of it. It's going to be great. Love it.
Yeah, we're going to get like the nerdy scientist perspective on all the woo-woo-y things today.
Yes, that's what we want. So just to introduce you, Ellen, whom I know from a mastermind I did at the beginning of the year, and she is a success coach based in the Pacific Northwest. Are you in Seattle?
Yeah, I'm south of Seattle, about 20, 30 minutes south of Seattle. Depends on traffic.
And I realized when I saw your name pop up on the screen, I literally don't know how to say your last name.
Oh, it rhymes with stinky. You'll never forget how to say it. My last name is pronounced Shinky, and it rhymes with stinky.
That's amazing.
I literally tell this to my students when I'm tutoring, and it gets a good laugh, but it's so true.
It's so true.
When I was in high school, I hated that, but now I just kind of embrace it.
It's really good.
Yeah.
So what I know about your background is that you were in grad school for some amazing scientific degree, and then you had a gut check, and you decided it was time to go on another path, and you trusted your intuition, which is another topic we've been talking a lot about, and you totally switched gears. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I usually actually kind of bring the beginnings of the story back to when I was in high school. Like, I was that kid in high school, which a lot of people can probably relate to this, who I was doing all the things. Like, I was in AP classes. I played 4 years of varsity soccer. I was in musical theater. I was in choir. I was taking private piano and voice lessons at one point in time. Like, I was doing freaking everything. Because I mean, I think I'd always been very driven by validation. I'm still to this day a people pleaser. But like, I was doing all of these things, and I was always very much praised for my intelligence and all of these things. So when I was choosing my major, I felt like I needed something that would wow, you know, like kind of in the same sense that when I just told you that your eyes got kind of big, I kind of wanted that kind of a reaction out of this is what I'm going to major in. Not to say that I didn't like my major at all, but it was very much driven by validation, impressing people. So I decided to be a microbiology major, which is micro is cool. I want to throw this out there. But it is something that when you tell people you're a microbiology major, they're just like, there is a like jaw drop kind of reaction because I was voluntarily studying bacteria, viruses, and parasites. Like, what 18-year-old girl is like, I want to study this for the rest of my life. But I did. I watched, I actually watched the movie, I don't know if you've heard of it, Outbreak.
Like
Dustin Hoffman. And yeah, I saw that when I was in ninth grade and I thought it was the coolest freaking thing in the history of the world. And I wanted to be those people. So I went into microbiology. Like I started college knowing that this was going to be my major. And there was no turning back from that. Like micro was my major. I started working in research labs about a month into school, which was actually unintentional. I got like set up with a lab job and just ended up really clicking with my manager. So I was a micro major and 4 years later, I graduated with a double major actually, or double degree in microbiology and genetics. I had 4 years of research experience and I wasn't 100% sure what my next step would be. So I just kept doing research. And by the time I entered my PhD program, which that's ultimately what I chose to do, was to do a PhD in microbiology. I had 6 years of research experience and one publication, which was kind of unheard of. I am published, my undergraduate research is published in the journal Biology of Reproduction. So I went into my PhD program with all this, felt like just hot shit, and arrived in graduate school at the University of Michigan. And, you know, the interview process, I probably had a big ego actually when I went into graduate school because the interview process just made me feel like I was hot shit as well. I applied to 10 schools. I got interviews at all but one. I interviewed at 6 schools and I got into every single school I interviewed at. So
oh my God.
I felt
Talk
like
about validation.
Shit. Yeah, right. So I went to the University of Michigan for graduate school. And you know, like any new thing when you start it, I was just like, it was like a shiny object. And I was just like, this is so fun. I'm so excited. I was like massively too enthusiastic. And then the reality hit of the fact that I was no longer the smartest person in the room and everybody I was with was equally as intelligent as me. It was equally as successful as me, and imposter syndrome hit hard, my first semester, to the point where actually that was my first experience in therapy, at the insistence of my program director. She set up an appointment with a therapist on campus and was just like, Ellen, you need to go to this. Yeah, I was struggling hard. I broke down in tears in the guy's office and, you know, talked about all the people that I felt like I was letting down. And yeah, so grad school kind of spiraled a little bit from there. It was probably good for the first 3, maybe 6 months, but it basically spiraled from there after. And during this time, I discovered coaching. As happens when you're in school, my health had started to spiral. And I discovered at-home workouts through a company called Beachbody. And they're the people who do Insanity and P90X and all of that. And I fell in love with it. And I wanted some extra accountability. So I started coaching for accountability, but also discount. An NLM. I wanted a discount. So I joined Beachbody and I fell in love with coaching. Did not expect it. I always say it threw a monkey wrench into my life, but I loved being able to support people with their goals. And I loved that I was able in that capacity to bring in, that's where I discovered personal growth. And I could bring personal growth to people and make book recommendations to people that had really changed my life and I thought would help them. And health became very foundational. And I feel like vitality is one of the most important things we can give ourselves. And so I discovered coaching, it threw a monkey wrench into my life. And the more I struggled in graduate school, the more I kept asking myself, is this actually what I want? Is this actually what I want? I would look at all of my mentors and realize as much as they inspired me, I didn't want their life. And as much as I still find, you know, biology and science interesting, I didn't want to be a researcher. There was no part of me that felt like that was the career path. I didn't see myself 10 years down the line, you know, oh, look at all these publications I have. Oh, look at these initials after my name. Like, that didn't fire me up. And I realized in fall 2016 that three initials after my name were not worth my sanity. They were not worth me being away from my family. I was 3,000 miles away from basically every person in my family. My grandpa passed away that spring, so that was kind of a gut check moment as well. But yeah, the ultimate result was I quit my PhD program at the beginning of the fourth year. I'm left with my master's degree, and life has been crazy since then.
Wow, what a leap.
Yeah.
What an absolute leap of trust. Oh my gosh. I love that story because you see those follow throughs of like, I mean, so many of us can relate to it, going through life, right? And you feel just one like motivator. And for you, it was validation, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're smart. We learn how to get what we want.
Like, oh, yeah.
Right? How to fulfill that motivation. And you make decisions and you move and you go and you go and you go and you get what you want. And then you realize that there's a much bigger part of you than just mm-hmm. that one need for validation.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it kind of got to the point for me too, where I realized that I could get all the validation I wanted from other people, but, and it's so cliche and it's so trite sounding, but until I felt validated in myself and I felt proud of myself and, you know, all that worthiness and enoughness, until I felt that about myself, it kind of didn't freaking matter if I got it from other people. Like, one of the first authors I'm exposed to, and I'm so grateful for this because you know how much of a fan of hers I am, was Brené Brown.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I needed to read those words. I needed to realize that so much of what I was feeling when I didn't feel validated was shame. I needed mm-hmm. to understand that for myself. So Brené Brown's work has been huge for me and just kind of making me realize, I do struggle with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And there is a way out. I don't always have to struggle with this. There is a plan. There's a path. There's a strategy to getting reconnected to a life without shame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I love that. So that's awesome. And I love the context that you've given us for who you are and where you come from and what you do now. It's so great. I love a good journey.
Oh, and yeah, I guess I didn't even really talk about what I do now. So my coaching has taken some twists and turns. When I left graduate school, I knew I didn't want a health and fitness coach. Like, as foundational as that is, there's so much more to life. We all know this, than, you know, being the smallest size you could be or having six pack abs. Like, I know I feel better when I'm taking care of myself and when I'm not, you know, I've been, you know, 30, almost 40 pounds heavier than I am now. I know that I just feel better, more energetic, all of these things when I'm taking care of myself physically, but there's so much more to life than that. There's, you know, there's career fulfillment, there's fulfillment in relationships. There's, you know, doing things that bring you joy, like recreation, fun. So I realized when I left that I wanted to do more along the lines of life coaching, which is super freaking broad, I know. but I kind of have always approached things from a very holistic perspective. You know, nothing in your life exists in a vacuum. Even if you're very career oriented and career driven, you're probably going to get to a point where prioritizing your career too much is going to detract from all of these other parts of your life that are really, really important. So I want more of the realm of life coaching. And then recently I've been really, really pivoting toward productivity and kind of like time management productivity, but from the perspective of high performance. I'm a big fan of Brendon Burchard as well, because there's little things that we can do, whether it's from the perspective of time management and using a planner and all that stuff, to make us more effective people in our lives. And I think that's really where the mindfulness practices and a lot of the stuff that we're going to talk about today really come into play, because I do find them to be tools to help you be a better person, to be a more high performing or more effective person. However you want to think about it, I think these tools can help you be better.
Right. For growth, for progress.
Exactly.
I love that. Yeah, I think one of the biggest reasons that you popped into my mind as a resource for us is that in our class, we have defined mindfulness as the intentional observation of our thoughts and actions without judgment. And I had really witnessed in that you so in that in you so often. And I realized, I feel like you don't tend towards judgment. You tend towards evaluation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the scientist in you. You have that objectivity, right?
That's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah.
You're able to just step back and be like, this isn't personal. Mm-hmm. This is what I did and what
data.
I didn't do.
Yeah. It really is. It very much is like that. And I think one of the particular instances I'm thinking of is when you DM'd me on Instagram about my weekly review and kind of some of the observations I'd made about myself. And yeah, I actually do think my answer to you is probably super insufficient, because what it really is it's about that scientist mindset and not looking at the things you did and didn't do as, okay, these are points for me and these are points against me. It's just data. It's just being very objective about, okay, this is what you did do. This is what you didn't do. What can we improve here? And why should we improve it? Because in what ways is it going to actually make your life better?
Yes. Yes. I love that. It's just data. That's another metaphor we've used in class, is that life is like a picture you've taken on your phone, right? Mm-hmm. Which is all data. And mm-hmm. it's represented on the screen, and it's not slanted. It's not biased. It's just a picture. It's just mm-hmm. data. But then we, as humans, we all do this. We slap a filter on that picture, right? Mm-hmm. That's how we're viewing that reality, is mm-hmm. through our filter. And if we're not aware that the filter is there, we think it's reality. But it's
so really not. Accurate. Yeah.
Right. We might have boosted the shadows. We might have pumped up the contrast. We might have made it really, really dark. Mm-hmm. We could have done anything, but the fact is that what reality is, what truth is under that filter. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I feel like mindfulness is just the observation that the filter exists.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, exactly. I think it's the observation that the filter exists, and the observation of okay, what am I doing that is putting that filter in place, and how can I get myself to a place where I'm comfortable with looking at the picture without the filter, or mm-hmm. completely taking the filter down? I like Instagram stories. I prefer my Instagram stories with a filter. But in the off chance that I record, which happens when, I'm doing my crazy workout videos or rambling. If I record a video without a filter, does that make it any less impactful? And there was a point in my past when I'd have been like, no, I can't post that. I can't post that. I've got to portray this beautiful image. I can't post it. And mm-hmm. now I'm just kind of like, well, the content's so important. So here you go.
Exactly. So tell me about, here you are in grad school. You've found coaching, you have mm-hmm. found personal growth. And I know those feelings of my sanity's on the edge mm-hmm. and I need to do whatever I can to get it back. Mm-hmm. And often that's where we are the most open to mm-hmm. the experiences and the information we need to have. I know mm-hmm. that's what it was for me. I was like, mm-hmm. if it takes meditating every single day to feel sane, that's what mm-hmm. I'll do. I don't care, right? The judgment was gone at that point. So what was your journey into, okay, these are the things that I need to feel secure, to feel like I'm in reality, right? What was your journey of, okay, meditation is helpful for me, journaling is helpful for me?
Mm-hmm. Well, journaling's an interesting one, because I've always been a journaler, to the point where I have journals from when I was a preteen. Still, in my cedar chest in my room. I've always been a journaler, but back then, journaling was more of a cute, the cute boy that you have a crush on mm-hmm. in school. That's kind of what my journaling was. It wasn't, I was a preteen. I'm not going to expect myself to be super insightful and introspective or anything. Right. But I've always journaled. I think on some level, I've always known that's a way for me to process. Actually, I feel like I'm more unfiltered when I'm verbally processing, which is kind of why I like doing these interviews and why I like doing podcasting, because I have a tendency when I'm writing to filter just a little bit to make something sound better, before I put it on the page. Mm-hmm. But I've always, those are my two ways I process my thoughts and what I'm experiencing, through journaling and through talking. So I've always been a journaler. But it probably wasn't, it actually really wasn't until after I left graduate school where I found all of these things. I dabbled in meditation before. Like I periodically did like the free calm meditation or I used Headspace.
Yep.
But I did it more from the perspective of all of these, you know, self-helpy gurus that I was reading their books were saying I should do these things. So I'm like, all right, I'll do them. But I think it was really, in October 2017, actually, we're coming up on my 2-year anniversary of discovering this. I read The Miracle Morning, the book The Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod. And The Miracle Morning is a series of 6 practices that you essentially do every single morning. You know, to however much amount of time you want to spend in these practices, it doesn't really matter. But there's 6. And it's an acronym called SAVERS. And the first S stands for silence. So whether that's prayer, meditation, it doesn't matter what your silence practice is, but to spend some time in silence. I've never been particularly religious. My mom jokes that we're CEOs, Christmas Eve only. never been particularly religious because I've always felt like my version of religion is having a really strong moral compass, and I don't need an outside religion to tell me my right or wrong. I just kind of live by my own moral compass. I do, that being said, really enjoy reading about like Buddhism and Taoism and stuff like that. I took a world religions class in college and I nerded out. It was great. but that prayer wasn't how I was going to spend that time. So I started dabbling in meditation. The second step, the A, is for affirmations. The V is for visualization. The E is for exercise. The R is for reading. And the S is for scribing, which is essentially journaling, because he needed to make a cute acronym. So a J would not have worked there. so I started doing these series of 6 practices in October 2017. Because a big reason for it was I felt like I needed a morning routine. I was in a time in my life where I just started doing remote work full time. At the time, I was remotely working as a contract editor for a company that helped non-native English speakers publish science journals or science papers. Mm-hmm. So I would help them edit it up and make it sound like they were a native English speaker. And I had no rhyme or reason to my day. And so I felt like I really needed a morning routine. So that's really where it started, was out of a desire to have a morning routine.
Got it.
And now I'm 2 years in and I protect that morning routine with my life. Like to the point where, you know, if I'm like dating someone and they're like, spend the night at my house, oftentimes I will say no, because I want to do my morning routine in the morning. Mm-hmm. Like it is maybe a little OCD, but it fills me up so much after now 2 years of doing it that's my time. Like I have set boundaries around when I will start checking work email, when I will set up appointments with clients in terms of coaching around my morning routine, because it's so important to me. And it's really been in the last year that in particular, the meditation and the journaling practices have really become such a huge part of that. You know, reading has been, you know, reading a personal development book every single morning has been a part of my life since April 2014. So a little over 5 years now. And in the last 2 years, I've read 50 self-help books a year.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I'm obsessive. I love it. Yeah. So coaching is definitely the right field for me, right?
Yeah. I think you're calling.
But that's always been a part of it. That's always been an important part of my day. But the meditation and the journaling, it's really been in the last year that I've realized how profoundly helpful they are for me, especially with the way my mind works.
Tell me about that, because your mind is unique.
I'll start with meditation. So meditation was hard for me when I started. You know, if you have any sort of an analytical brain or an achiever brain, you're very do oriented. You know, it's all about what you can produce and what you can get done over the course of the day. And so meditation was hard for me when I started because I could not shut my damn brain off. That's what I felt like I was supposed to do in meditation, was to not think.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really fought against meditation for a really long time because it just felt like this internal battle. And I was just like, how is this beneficial for me? I'm just getting frustrated with myself because I can't stop thinking. But what I've come to realize, particularly over the past year, and maybe it was once I took the Enneagram and I realized, oh shit, I'm a textbook achiever. Enneagram 3, oh hey. I realized that, the first step was realizing that having thoughts when you're meditating is so okay. Like, not only is it normal, it's okay. Like, if you have thoughts, the thing that I had to realize is if I had a thought, I just needed to observe it. I needed to step into actually more of like the scientist mentality and just be objective and kind of literally, if it was a highway, just kind of watch that thought go by. That was kind of the first step. And, you know, like anything, that's a practice. Sometimes, some days it's really, really hard when I'm particularly squirrel brained that day. And some days it's really, really easy. But that was kind of step one, was realizing that it's not about not having thoughts. It's about being more objective about the thoughts I have and not reacting to them. You know, if I think of a to-do list item, they're actually, this is something for people who meditate and feel like they're struggling with the squirrel brained and thinking of things. I would keep like a little notebook next to me, or sometimes even just because I use the Calm app on my phone when I meditate, because I like guided meditations. I feel like my squirrel brain would be next level if I was just doing, you know, listen to rain sounds for 10 minutes. I would have my phone next to me. But if I had a thought and it was a pressing to do or something that I really was just like, I cannot forget this, I would allow myself to take that 5 seconds to just jot that thing down. And then I would go back to meditating.
Yes.
If it was something like that. And then other times it was just step into observer mode. Like, I'm freaking out about my date tonight, which was my meditation yesterday. Okay, you're freaking out about your date tonight. Like, it was just stepping back from it. So that was the big thing. And then the other side of it was realizing, because I am such a doer, because I have such an active brain, realizing how freaking necessary meditation is for me, because frankly, that 10 minutes, and sometimes it's 5 minutes if I'm particularly crunched for time on a particular morning, that is possibly the only time in my day where I let my brain stop thinking. And that, once I realized that I have such a hyperactive mind, and really we all do, but for some of us, I think those thoughts just push themselves to the surface a lot more than others. I needed to give myself that space in my day to have 10 minutes where I didn't feel the need to create. I didn't feel the need to, you know me, I'm an OCD planner. I didn't feel the need to write something in my planner, you know, like I needed to give myself that space. And actually I realized that it tied back to a Brené Brown thing. Brené Brown, I used to love this. I've never done it. I should. But she used to talk about scheduling white space into her day. Like she would block out 30, 60 minutes because she's an academic.
Yes.
So she would intentionally block out that time in her day to just give herself some space to not do for a period of time. I've actually done some of my best creating from the perspective of my business, from the perspective of just life and kind of figuring out, okay, how am I going to do this thing after meditation? Because our brain can get exhausted just like our physical body can. And I feel like if we don't give ourselves that space, what I've realized for me is if I don't give myself that space, my brain isn't functioning as optimally. And I've learned that on the days where I've skipped meditating versus the days where I've actually meditated, that my brain just seems so more like, yeah, I got this. Let's do this. We have this idea. Like
there's clarity.
Yeah. So that was kind of the meditation journey, from feeling just squirrel brained and like I was fighting against meditation to realizing how important it was to give myself that space. But yeah, that's that little tangible tip that I gave for those people that feel like, yeah, but the thoughts I'm having while I'm meditating are important. Okay. Grab your phone, the note app on your phone, and type, okay, I got to go get this at the grocery store later today so I can make that dish for the party tomorrow. Like whatever. If you're afraid you're going to forget the thing and you really need to remember it, then jot it down and then go back to your meditation.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't fail at meditation if you do that.
Right.
And I had to learn that lesson, as well as learning how important it was for me to give myself that space. Mm-hmm. So that's the meditation perspective. Do you have any like questions or?
Well, I think this is a great place to add in the physicality of it, how you talked about the different brains and how that works.
Oh yeah. I almost forgot about that. Yeah. And so I actually went to a Mind Valley day seminar. Mind Valley is a personal growth like company. And they had a video on meditation, and they said a couple things in there that I just loved, because it made so much sense to me from the perspective that I used to be a health coach, but also just how my mind was responding to meditation. So how they kind of framed it was, you have two parts of your brain, essentially. You have a critical brain and you have an intuitive brain.
Mm-hmm.
And the critical brain is screaming at you all day. The critical brain is that, you know, when you're meditating, it's the one going, but you need to get this at the store tomorrow.
Right.
That's your critical brain. Or it's saying, you know, that's the part of your brain going, this is such a waste of my time. I could be doing this, this, and this instead of just sitting here, mm-hmm. like breathing. That's your critical brain. Your intuitive brain, as opposed to the screaming critical brain, your intuitive brain is whispering. Your intuitive brain is the one that's sitting there going, yeah, I need that at the store. Or, yeah, I could be doing other things, but God, doesn't it feel nice right now to just sit? That's your intuitive brain.
Right.
And the intuitive brain, like the name implies, that's your intuition. That's the part of you that doesn't get a say a lot of the time, mm-hmm. but is subtly hinting and whispering at what you need.
Mm-hmm.
And so how they framed it in this video was, you've got these two brains, and when you're meditating, you're taking your intuitive brain to the gym. And the more you meditate, your intuitive brain will never scream, but the louder and more assertive your intuitive brain gets.
Mm-hmm.
And I've definitely felt that, you know, 2 years into meditating, I probably phoned it in for the first year, I'll be completely honest. But the second year, it started clicking of how different my day felt when I didn't meditate. And I started being much more intentional and much more deliberate about how I was approaching my meditation practice, which my practice really isn't much, guys. I have the Calm app and I do the Calm daily Calm meditation with my headphones. After I read and drank my coffee in the morning, I sit and I meditate for 10 minutes. That's my meditation practice.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel like it's made my intuitive brain, because I used to joke that I have zero intuition. Like, I have no idea how to follow my gut, which if you look at my life, that's completely untrue. Right. But it's only been in the last probably year or two that I've started to realize, I actually have a much clearer picture on who I am and what I want and what that intuition is telling me. And I do credit a lot of that to meditation.
I love it. Because we have really, really worked out that intuition and mindfulness have to go hand in hand. Mm. The intuition is going to help us create the practices of mindfulness that ourselves as an individual we need, right? Mm-hmm. Some people really need the affirmation. Some people really need mirror work. You know, mm-hmm. some people need different things. And it's our intuition that helps us know which path we should go down right now in this season of our life, right? Mm-hmm. And it's without the intuition, we don't know how to take those leaps that we mm-hmm. need to take, right? Mm-hmm. That the mindfulness, you know, when you were in college and you were getting these nudges of this isn't the right place for you,
mm-hmm.
it's time to go on a different path, you know, mm-hmm. like those are, if we're not mindful, we can't even hear the intuition.
Yeah, that's, as you were saying that, I glanced back at your guys' definition. And the intuition part is really, so the observation of our thoughts and actions without judgment, the intuition. Step one, I always should say awareness is step one. And awareness is, in this sense, I would almost say is intuition. Like your intuition, you have to bring those thoughts to the surface before you can, you know, observe them without judgment. Mm-hmm. That without judgment piece doesn't even come into play if those thoughts aren't on the surface a little bit more.
Right.
And so that, for me, that was kind of the big thing that meditation did, is it pushed those thoughts to the surface.
I love that. That's so great. That's so great.
And actually, from the, even like diving into journaling, I'm really glad we started with meditation. I didn't even plan it that way, because I don't think my journaling would have been as effective if I wasn't meditating.
So tell me more about that.
Well, like I said, like the intuition has now, you know, been pushed to the surface so much more. And when I used to journal, it was very much like what's going on in my life. Mm-hmm. Like it was kind of more of like a chronological recap, with sometimes, you know, journaling is great if you need to vent out frustrations and emotions. And so it was a lot of that, but it wasn't a lot of, you know, I felt this, what does it mean?
Yeah.
And that's something that has really taken off since I left graduate school, since I, you know, moved back from Michigan. I traveled the world for 2018. So there was a lot of, why am I here? Why did I want to do this? What am I learning about myself? Journaling was just like an epic practice the last 2 years. But even lately, like I'm very single and I've started dating again. Been really, really insightful in that as well. And it's just been, once meditation pushed those thoughts to the surface, because I usually actually in my morning routine, sorry, I feel like I'm rambling a lot, but in my morning routine, I meditate before I journal.
Okay.
Essentially without fail. There are some mornings when I wake up and there's something really heavy on my mind, like that work situation I told you guys about last week. Yeah. And I just need to word vomit, like first thing in the morning. Like I just need to get all of this out there. That's rare though. Usually what happens is I meditate, and maybe there's something in my guided meditation that really spurs a thought in me that I want to explore more. But I usually meditate after I journal, or journal after I meditate. And I find that to be really, really interesting to just explore some of those thoughts. I'm actually really curious. Shoot, it's not in here. I'm just going to grab my journal and be like, what are some of the things I wrote about? It's in my bedroom. I journaled after my date last night. But yeah, some of the things are like, I had somebody DM me the other day about, you know, my three pillars of coaching. My three pillars are clarity, consistency, and confidence. And she DM'd me thinking, is it really about consistency or is it more about commitment? We had this little DM conversation. So I journaled about that. Like, what is the difference? Like, what do I feel about this? And I actually came out of it thinking, nope, I don't think it's about commitment. I think it's about consistency. You can be committed for a short period of time, but how's that going to help you if it's not consistent? So I journal out stuff like that. I journal out, I had a mini panic attack after I started dating again about like, I suck at this and why do I suck at dating and what's wrong with me? And I journaled that out, and it's all, you know, it was all about fear and the things that I were afraid of and the things that I was afraid of experiencing again and the ways in which I was afraid of being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. So it's little things like that, but then it's also like the bigger questions. Like, if, you know, I've had moments where I've questioned, you know, should I coach? Am I a good coach? Am I cut out for this? I journal.
Yeah.
And I think journaling became even more of an important practice for really, it's really just about getting clarity on where your head's at, why you're feeling the way you're feeling. That why question, I'm obsessed with asking yourself why for every goal you set, for every, you know, thing that you're beating yourself up for every emotion that you feel, why are you feeling this? It's powerful to understand yourself at such a level where you can very, very clearly articulate this is why.
Yes.
You know, I have back burner dating for a year because it's, or for years actually, because it's so much easier to just do me and be independent than it is to put myself out there. I have fear there.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't have had as clear of a picture about what I'm afraid of and why I'm afraid of those things if I hadn't journaled.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I know that self-love is just a crucial part of success in life. And mm-hmm. I have realized that you can't love someone you don't know, mm-hmm. right? And the more you get to know someone, the more you love them 100% of the time.
If you make a clip of this to share anywhere on social media, please make that it. You can't love someone you don't know. I'm just,
right?
Yeah.
Right. And so the more we get to know ourselves, the more we ask that question, why, mm-hmm. the more we increase our capacity to love ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I've done therapy. When I was on remote year in 2018, when I was traveling, I actually got a therapist like that I met with consistently or that I spoke with consistently because I was navigating some really difficult questions that I frankly didn't know how to navigate on my own, you know, about, you know, do I keep this relationship or do I, you know, remove this person from my life? Is it serving mm-hmm. me to keep them around? You know, I got a therapist to help me navigate through that. Once I navigated through that, I didn't feel like I needed the therapist as much, but lately I wish I had a therapist to navigate some of these things. It's kind of expensive. So my journal has essentially become my therapist. Right. Like it's a personal space. Nobody reads that thing but me, and I can be as honest as humanly possible in that journal. Yeah. Sometimes it's about asking yourself the right questions. But that's kind of where meditation comes back into the fray. You're probably going to have that intuitive brain come into play and bring up a question when you're meditating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was meditating this morning, and one of the questions that came up for me was, you know, do I feel like I should like this person more than I do? You know, the person I've been seeing. Do I feel like I should like them more than I do? Is that why I feel like such conflict? Haven't done it yet because this right. is the one morning I didn't journal because I woke up 2 hours later. Best believe I'll be journaling on that question after we're done here. But that's kind of where they go hand in hand, I find, is that meditation usually raises the questions or raises some of those immediate thoughts. Like once you get to the point where that intuitive voice starts pushing through,
mm-hmm.
and then journaling is where you work it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's super like, this is kind of what we were talking about beforehand. It's so practical. Like these are not woo-woo practices. These are so practical. If you have any desire to better understand yourself, what you want in your life, what pieces of your life are serving you toward getting that and what pieces aren't, these two practices are stupid practical to help you do that. Like, I can't say it enough. Like you improve that intuition and then you explore it
mm-hmm.
in these two practices together. It's amazing.
So what I'm hearing from you, how I'm translating this in my head, is that you see such benefit from these mm-hmm. two practices because I witnessed you constantly evaluating where you are, what your goals are, why they're your goals, how you're heading in that direction, what's the best way to get there. And these two practices have proven to you over and over again to be the most effective way to get there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think if I didn't do these two things, you know, I might eventually course correct on pursuing some of my goals and all of that. I might eventually get there. But in the same way that I'll often say about coaching and therapy, you know, you could probably achieve what you want to achieve without coaching and therapy. But those are two things that are going to help fast track you.
Yeah.
It's the same way with meditation and journaling. These practices are things that, yeah, you might be able to figure out these things that you want, these reasons why you want them. You might be able to figure that out over the course of time, for sure. Like, life will teach you those things.
Right.
But if you want to fast track it, if you want to have that understanding sooner rather than later, these are practices that I find have helped me fast track my understanding of myself. Like I have learned so much about myself over the last 2 years. Like I felt that nudge to quit graduate school. I quit graduate school. And then a little over a year and a half later, actually a little under a year and a half later, I was in Argentina and Colombia traveling and I was learning more about myself. Yeah. And then I finished traveling and I'm back home and I'm living with my parents. Which is an adventure in and of itself. Thank you, Mom and Dad, for letting me live with you. I love you, even though you drive me crazy. Yeah, it's more learning about myself. And it's learning, you know, even related to that, you know, talk about family and spending time with family and being triggered by things that family do. Journal that shit out. I understand my relationship with my parents so much better. I understand shit that I've carried since I was a childhood, so much better.
Absolutely.
Therapy's helpful with that, but sometimes you just need a freaking notebook and a pen.
Which is so much cheaper than therapy.
So much cheaper.
Oh, it's
go to Michael's. They have really cute ones and they're only $4.99.
I love it. There's your plug. Okay, before I forget, there is a concept you introduced me to that I have loved because it's made me so much more aware in certain situations. Tell me about your practice of grounding.
Ooh. Okay, so this is only something that I started doing like earlier this summer. So I have not been doing it for very long, and I'm not gonna lie, I've been a slacker ever since it got colder and grosser out in the Pacific Northwest. But I was introduced to this practice when I was realizing that my sleep habits were crap. Like, not necessarily because I wasn't going to bed at the right time or waking up at the right time. I couldn't fall asleep. I couldn't stay asleep. My sleep habits were crappy. So I grabbed this book called Sleep Smarter by Sean Stevenson. And in that book, he talks about all sorts of things that we can do to help us sleep better. So talk about practical application.
Yes.
Like, I had this problem. I read this book. And in reading this book, I was reintroduced actually to this concept of grounding. And what grounding is it is the essentially the experience of putting your bare feet on the ground. You can do it on asphalt. It doesn't work as well. So we're talking like feet in dirt, feet on grass. And what this process does is essentially there are, man, I haven't like read the logistics of it in a while, so I might flub it just a teeny bit. But if I do, go on my Instagram stories and click on the highlight that says nerd alert, because I explain it very well on that one. But essentially how this works is in our bodies, we have a charge. FYI, can you hear the piano in the background?
Yeah.
Okay, good. in our bodies, we have charge. That's just kind of how, you know, the atoms that make up our cells operate. We have an inherent charge to our bodies, you know, positive, negative, that kind of thing. And so we have an inherent, I believe it's negative charge. Yeah. Or shit. Positive charge? Crap. I think it might be an inherent positive charge that we just carry around in our bodies. And it's part of the reason why we have this is because a lot of our biological processes that our bodies engage in, you know, the immune system produces these things called reactive oxygen species, which help fight off infections and all sorts of other stuff. They're essentially a stress response. Very, very natural that your body produces these reactive oxygen species. But these reactive oxygen species have a charge. Pretty sure it's positive. My immunology brain does not work the way it used to. But we have these charges. We're carrying this around with us. And the earth has a surplus of negative charge.
Okay.
Has a surplus of electrons, which are a part of every single atom on this planet, but it has a lot of them and they're negatively charged. So when you put your feet to the ground, essentially what happens is the charge balances out. The positive charge we carry and then the negative charge of the earth balances out. It's almost like you think of like pHing, like, oh, I'm going to pH a pool to make sure that it's at the right pH so it doesn't like acid burn people or, you know, whatever. It's kind of like that. Your body is essentially neutralizing itself when you're doing that, but it's neutralizing its charge. And you can only do that by putting your bare feet to the surface of the earth. And most of us, we're walking around with shoes on.
Yeah.
All the time. And that rubber is not a good conductor of electricity, right? That's why the soles of our shoes are rubber and the tires are rubber. So inherently by the footwear we wear, we're not experiencing this. So over the summer, what I started to do was during my work breaks, after I would go jump on my mini trampoline, I would go outside, take off my shoes and just go around and walk around in the grass mm-hmm. for like 5-10 minutes. And that in conjunction with just the vitamin D from being outside and experiencing, you know, natural light, I started sleeping so much better.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I still wake up periodically, especially now because I haven't been grounding as much now that it's gotten gross and Pacific Northwest like outside. But yeah, that's essentially, that's the practice, is it's simply putting your bare feet to the ground. And the whole idea there is that you are essentially equilibrating the charge in your body. And it helps a lot of, you know, stress, it helps your immune system, and it helps you sleep better. So that was the very practical reason why I started doing it. And it helps a lot.
I love it. I love it. And I, where I took that to, and I think I told you, was when I'm fly fishing and I'm standing in a river, yes, I have shoes on, but my hands are in the water. My body's feeling the current. You know, there's a lot of, I don't know, not only a lot of interaction with me in the water, but I feel like there's, I can see that there would be ions that are changing, you know, and rebalancing. And yeah,
that's kind of exactly what it is. It's like, we are, you know, if we think of where we came from, historically speaking, you know, cavemen didn't have shoes. We have this natural connection to the world around us. We have so many people find, you know, solace, peace, whatever you want to call it, in nature. And there is actually the kind of what I took from this, there's a biological basis for why we experiencing that, why putting your hand in a river can be so calming and so relaxing. It's because your body is able to release all of this. Essentially, it's like a pent up stress response. It's able to release that or equilibrate that with this natural source of balancing energy. That's probably the most woo woo thing you will ever hear me say. but there is a biological basis to it. And Science Ellen, I appreciate that.
Yes, I do too. I do too. I love to nerd out on that.
I'll nerd out on all sorts of things. You should get me all talking about like psychology and the brain and all of that stuff. Phenomenal. I love it.
So good. So good. So I think that's probably my last question is, if you had someone say, yeah, mindfulness, meditation, it's just too woo-woo for me. I can't make it concrete in my head, so I can't relate to it, and I don't know how to embrace it. You know, if one of your coaching clients said that to you, how would you respond?
I actually have had a coaching client say that to me. And to that I would say is, I would almost say stop thinking of it as mindfulness.
Okay.
Stop thinking of it as mindfulness practices. Start thinking of it as like, what, like, hey, why are you doing this? Why do you think mindfulness is going to help you? Go back to that why, because probably what it's going to come down to is some derivative of, I want to be a better version of myself. You know, maybe your reason for mindfulness is presence or something like that. I don't know, but it probably comes down to wanting to be a better version of yourself. Okay. If you want to be a better version of yourself, what are some of the things that you think are keeping you from being a better version of yourself? You know, maybe it's exactly some of the stuff I talked about experiencing before, feeling like you can't ever take the foot off the gas, that you always need to be doing and achieving, blah, blah, blah. Okay. And maybe that's taking you away from your relationships or your ability to be at your healthiest. Okay. So ask yourself these couple questions. And then what I would tell you is, meditation is going to give you probably the only space in your day that you will ever have. Stop thinking of it as, you know, like, this is a mindfulness practice that I need to do to be a more mindful human. No, I would say this is a practice that is going to help you give yourself space to figure out what you want. You know, these two practices, like we talked about, if we combine them together, these are going to help you tap into you. It's going to help you find that space to learn what you want. And maybe that still sounds a little bit woo-woo, but it's probably the most practical application that I found in terms of, you know, improving your intuition. You know, reading a book, awesome. You can learn, you know, what intuition is. You can learn about some of these practices, but to create that, ultimately you are going to have to do something.
Right.
And if you're not willing to give yourself 5-10 minutes a day to do that, I would question how much you want it, which might be a little, little aggressive. Does that kind of answer your question?
It does, because it inspires me to think it is the straight line. It is the straight path mm-hmm. to that next version of ourselves. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we can spend the next 20 years figuring it out, or we mm-hmm. can spend the next 2 years.
Yeah.
The choice is.
Yeah. It really comes back to, yeah, that thing that I said before is you need to get, like, ask yourself those couple questions, get really, really clear on why you want to be more mindful. What do you think it's going to give you? Like, yeah. and what are the things that are currently holding you back from getting that? And if you think of it in that context and you say, okay, I'm willing to try this 5-10 minutes a day thing that could potentially fast track me to mm-hmm. being that version of the person I want. If you're not willing to give yourself the 5-10 minutes a day to meditate, you know, maybe it's a 5-minute meditation and then a 5-minute, this is what I learned during my meditation, or this is what that meditation made me feel. It does not have to be anything crazy here.
Right.
Simplify it as much as you freaking need to. If you are a new meditator, start with 1 minute of meditation. It might seem completely worthless, but it's a start.
Yeah.
Create some sort of small, this is where my like discipline and just practice brain kicks in. Start with the simplest version of these practices. 1 minute meditation, 5 minutes of writing down what you learned, you know, daily minimums. That's what I've heard them called before, as a daily minimum for how you can start implementing this
mm-hmm.
and then increase that over time as you get comfortable with the practices.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not willing to give that to yourself, maybe mindfulness isn't, you know, what you're striving right for time. Right now. Yep. Maybe it's not the right time for mindfulness for you.
Right. 5 to 10 minutes a day.
Yeah.
And that's so fun to be able to say, and that's okay, because mm-hmm. we're not judging that.
Mm-hmm.
We're not judging where you are right now at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And that lack of judgment leaves the door open for you to evolve in that time mm-hmm. to come X amount of time down the road.
Yeah.
You are ready.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about the fact that I've been journaling since I was a child.
Right.
We talked about the fact that I was introduced to meditation years ago. I actually think the first time I meditated was when I was in college in that world religions class.
Yeah.
Did I meditate for any of the years afterward? Fuck no. No, I didn't. I was introduced to these mindfulness practices over the course of the last 30 years of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And only in the last two have they become consistent practices. You have to be in the right headspace, the right time in your life. So if you are, like, even if everything that we've talked about today and you're still just kind of like meh, not feeling it, it may just not be the right time for you.
Yep.
Keep these practices in your back pocket, because ultimately these are tools in your tool belt. These are tools to help you be a better human.
Yeah.
Might not be the right time for you to apply those tools. That's fine. Doesn't mean that tool can't still be in your tool belt.
Absolutely.
So I would say if we leave with anything in terms of that, you know, person who's just not feeling it and doesn't think this is the right tool for them, keep it in your back pocket. You never know when it might become the right tool for you.
That's right. I love it. I love it. So I will definitely list all your contact info, but give it to us. What's your website? What's your Instagram?
Yeah, I am Coach Ellen everywhere, basically. I am coachellen.com. You can see in my name on the Zoom screen, unless that's going to get removed. It's ELLYN. I spell it weird. I know. I made it easy on everybody, though. You don't have to worry about my last name. Coachellen.com. I am Coach Ellen on Instagram. I am Facebook.com/Coach Ellen, but in all actuality, just look me up on Instagram. That's where I always am. It's my happy place.
It's your home.
You'll get to see me doing awkward dance parties to music before I work out. It's great. It's fun.
I love it. And I love the sneak peeks into your journaling, your planning system, and the evaluation that you put into it. And please tell me you're putting together your own planner.
I'm working on it. I'm on Canva playing with some designs. Yeah. And I'm going to, it's been a crazy fall, but we're about to start a new quarter in a couple weeks. So I definitely am planning on creating some goals around this planner, and when I'm going to have kind of like a rough version of it. And I'm going to pick my friend's brain about where she published her self-connection journal, so I can maybe publish in a same place. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's in the works. I'm working on it.
If Rachel Hollis can publish, it's not even a planner. It's literally the same page over and over and over again for like 365 days.
Which I hate, and my mind will not be that way.
If she can publish and sell that, you can sell your amazing system. And I'm so excited. I am here for that.
Seriously, thank you so much. You're one of my biggest cheerleaders with that. So yes, it's happening. I will get on that.
Excellent.
Promise.
Because you're one of the few in my life that meditation and journaling is a non-negotiable, and evaluating my week and my month and my quarter and my year are non-negotiables. Like, to be able to combine those two concepts together is so powerful, and you not a lot of people do it.
I totally agree. It's about doing the things that make me feel like a better me and being disciplined about doing them. That's why consistency is one of my three pillars. So yeah. And if anybody wants to hear more about all of that jazz, Instagram.
Awesome.
Instagram, my friends. Instagram and my website.
Excellent.
And if you go on my website and sign up for my email list, you get my Badass Woman playlist.
Yeah, baby. I love it. Thank you so much, Ellen. I really enjoyed it, and I think this is going to be a lot of help for a lot of people.
Thank you for having me.
Yes.
But before you go, one last thing. I just want to say thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Growth Tribe, and thank you so much for your support. If you've been enjoying what you're hearing and you want to help me and all of our wonderful guests get their message out, there are a few things you could do. You could send an episode that you really loved to a friend that you really think would appreciate it. You could subscribe and give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Or you could take a screenshot and post it in your Instagram or Facebook stories. I love stories, and I would love nothing more than the opportunity to shout you out and send you a massive thank you. Once again, thank you so much for listening, and thank you for being a part of the Growth Tribe.